God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. He spoke. He said, let there be light. And because we speak, we believe, about the happenings in this world and remain mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom, I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to Disciples View. I heard something in President Trump's voice that I have been praying to hear for 3.5 to 4 years. Praise God. I don't watch political speeches lifetime. I do not involve myself in political spectacle. I do not attend political rallies. I view this as show research. I am not looking for anybody to lead me other than the Lord Jesus. I look at presidents as a hired executive position who work for us to carry out what would be inconvenient for the people to do on as a group. I look at him as the chief executive of the executive branch, the chief executive of that branch, the commander-in-chief of the military, and one of our three branches of government. I look at this process as a job interview. And it thrills me, as one of the people who's looking to hire a president, to have seen this emotion from President Trump, because I prayed about it for so long. I believe the two worst combinations that you can ever have in a leader are the combination of ignorance and arrogance. When those two things are combined, ignorance and arrogance, you end up with a combination of outcomes: cruelty, incompetence, blatant self-dealing, arrogance, ignorance of how that can affect others. I don't think President Trump's ignorant, not anymore. I don't know that he ever was, honestly. I don't think he was ignorant of how DC works, that's for sure. After all, he had purchased politicians. I don't think he's ignorant about how business works. After all, he survived in it and thrived in it. I think he was ignorant about one thing, and that is how God has blessed him. Now, I don't know him. I've never met him. So I want to be clear on that. I'm just looking at patterns. I heard it and I saw it. And this was when President Trump said he wasn't supposed to be alive. And the
crowd
disagreed.
I'm not supposed to be here tonight. Not supposed to be here.
Yes, you are! Yes, you are! Yeah.
The president went on in that moment to talk about it being providential, that many people said it was providential, that it was by the grace of God. He actually said, I am here by the grace of God. And I heard it in his voice when he spoke those words. I'm here by the grace of God. I heard President Trump's humility. God, in other words, is now speaking to President Trump, maybe in a different way. And again, Donald Trump credits God for his survival in Butler, clip number 2.
There was blood pouring everywhere, and yet, in a certain way, I felt very safe because I had God on my side. I felt that.
He did. I heard it. Humility. I'm not supposed to be here, but for the grace of God. That is such a beautiful gift. I hope that President Trump will understand something where he said, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm here but the grace of God, by the grace of God. Mr. President, that's been true about everything. You breathe through the grace of God on a daily basis. You were given a spirit that doesn't want to back down by the grace of God. You were given a platform of media, The Apprentice and other platforms, The Apprentice being the most prominent, by the grace of God. You were given wealth, first of all, inherited, built upon then by you in skills that God gave you, and a hunger that God gave you. You have a hunger to have your name everywhere. That's prideful. And God is using it. He equipped you to want to be at the center of every conversation. And that's worked for you in politics. It has. And now, God has shown you. You breathe because he turned your head. He saved you. You couldn't have done that on your own. Now, you could turn your head on your own. But that sense of humility that you have, that's God reminding you of something, I think, Mr. President. He may give you an opportunity to serve again in the White House, this time as a humble leader, not a boss. But I'd ask you, how is it, sir, that you can stand on that podium with a newly neutered platform of the Republican National Committee that no longer recognizes marriages between a man and a woman? How is that humble? How is it serving this God who saved you, the only God? I understand why it's being done. We talked about it yesterday. It's to bring in Silicon Valley money and Hollywood people. I listened again to Amber Rose's speech. She didn't say the phrase one love, but she said all the words. It's not one love. There are at least four types of biblical love, and we are to constrain ourselves to those types. We're not to cross them, not where they don't belong. We're never to love our daughters, God forbid, as we love our wives. Gross. We're never to love a male friend the way we love our wives. Again, gross. And all of us fall short. All of us. But this humility that he's given you, the Lord has given you, Mr. President, has something bigger politically. It's an opportunity for you to look back at your first term and your most consequential mistake, that which cost you your second term, was not trusting the instincts God gave you. You're a deal maker, sir. You were given the art of the deal by the Lord and given the opportunity to develop it by the circumstances in which you were raised with the father who raised you. You saw the game of COVID. You said it's a flu. It's going to go away. Some people are going to get sick. Some people are going to get immunity. Then it's going to go away. You were right. And then I think, Mr. President, you began relying on your own wisdom and the wisdom of others. There wasn't wisdom at all. I hope that you will lean into the wisdom of God. I hope you fear him now in a healthy sense because he didn't have to turn your head. Back to the speech about the firefighter who lost his life, giving it for his family because that's what biblical love means. Trump asked the crowd to observe a moment of silence for Corey Contempore.
He lost his life selflessly acting as a human shield to protect them from flying bullets. He went right over the top of them and was hit. So now I ask that we observe a moment of silence in honor of our friend Corey.
There is no greater love than to lay down one's life for others.
This is the spirit that forged America in her darkest hours, and this is the love that will lead America back to the summit of human achievement and greatness. This is what we need. Despite such a heinous attack, we unite this evening more determined than ever. I am more determined than ever, and so are you. So is everybody in this room.
Do you hear it too? I really hope it's not acting. I really hear humility. Do you? That feeling can last. When I finally gave up the last thing I was holding on to for a while. I probably have others now I've started to hold on to again. And it's this way with God that we want to give our lives to him, but just not that part. It was parenting. I had convinced myself that I had an inexhaustible supply of patience and love for my daughter, When she got so angry with me because I put her in treatment for a year and a half, 13 months, she stopped talking to me in my own home, would barely acknowledge my presence. And it was painful. I felt hurt. I felt betrayed. I felt angry. I felt sorrowful. I felt confused. And I felt, most of all, hopeless that I would ever have a relationship with my beloved daughter again. That lasted until I ugly wept. I think, thrown the shirt out because of what dripped onto it. I'm saying ugly weeping, if you get my meaning. And I said to the Lord, I can't do it. I've run out of patience and I've run out of love. I have exhausted my supply because I don't have yours. I need you to love her for me. I never stopped feeling love for her, but you understand where I was at, that moribund. Within weeks, our relationship began to change because God's love came into the picture. I hear President Trump welcoming God's love. So, sir, put biblical marriage back into the platform. That's one of the most beautiful ways God blesses us. President Trump asks us to be hopeful about the future of America. Clip number 5.
It's done by the Border Patrol. One of the greatest charts I've ever seen. It showed everything just like that. You know the chart. Oh, there it is. That's pretty good. Wow. Last time I put up that chart, I never really got to look at it. But without that chart, I would not be here today.
That's a different clip. It's a good one. It's President Trump joking about the chart that saved his life. Apparently, figurehead Biden actually asked President Trump, why did you turn your head? Then the president said, well, because I was looking at an immigration chart showing how bad you are at immigration. This is in clip 5 where President Trump asked us to be hopeful about America.
And the entire world, I tell you this, we want our hostages back, and they better be back before I assume office, or you will be paying a very big price.
Okay, having some problems with the clips. President Trump told us to be hopeful. You know what, sir? I can be more hopeful now. I can because I hear the humility in your voice. So let me please, please, please suggest this to you, sir, please. Please get to your knees. Open the Bible. Read the Ten Commandments. And reconsider your platform. The platform of the RNC, the neutering of marriage. Please reflect upon the fact that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. President Trump, God could have held your head in place. He's done that with rulers and leaders and wannabe rulers before. He didn't do that with you because you are given an opportunity to take all those talents that he gave you to steward and to bring our country back to godliness. That, sir, would repay the debt you cannot repay. The debt of sin, you can't repay that. But you can go to the God who turned your head and say, I will now serve you. Serving him would be accepting the fact that the fear of the Lord being the beginning of wisdom, it's only the beginning. In other words, not the completion of wisdom. Humility is a gift, and you were given the gift of money to finance campaigns, notoriety, platform, and the Oval Office. And if you make it past the massive vote fraud, you're going to be given an opportunity to this time act as a steward. I wish you well. We'll come back under Disciples View. We'll be right back. Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Just we'll get back to the convention stuff here in a second. This is from a site called Pink News. It's a same-sex attracted propaganda site. J.K. Rowling claims best cure for gender dysphoria is to let children go through puberty. They post that critically as if what an insane thing. Why would you let a child go through puberty? That's never been done. Reminds me of when the World Health Organization informed us that there's no such thing as herd immunity. What are you talking about? That would mean that a whole bunch of people became immune to something and then the disease had nowhere to go. That doesn't happen. Amazing, the world of lies in which we live. We talked to President Trump last segment. This missing ingredient for me in him has been humility. You can believe in God and not serve him. And you end up being in the same place as Satan. Satan knows God exists. He simply says, I will not serve. Non servium. I won't do it. And you can think you're serving God, but until you're humble, I don't know that you can really know that. So I was thrilled to hear some humility in President Trump's voice. J.D. Vance, we'll talk about him for a second. And then I do need to get to something incredible about the Secret Service and this attempt on Trump's life. There's a couple things that we need to talk about this in relation to this. Okay, let's start here. J.D. Vance says, credits conservative movements to people like his mom.
Our movement is about single moms like mine who struggled with money and addiction but never gave up. And I'm proud to say that tonight my mom is here, 10 years clean and sober. I love you, Mom.
Well, the conservative movement is not one that is just about single moms who faced a drug addiction. The conservative movement should be about conserving something. But conserving what? If we are not conserving a godly view of government, a recognition that our Constitution and Bill of Rights is inspired by the Bible, inspired by God's Word, then we're conserving opinion. Because a Constitution inspired by God's Word with a Bill of Rights stating these are inalienable rights that exist because God made us, and they're therefore inalienable, if we do not conserve that, we end up with conserving nothing. We are led by the temporary feelings of a ruler. And if you've ever lived in a really destructive or dysfunctional household, being led by feelings is terrifying. I can remember when our daughter was at the height of her dysfunction because of what happened to her and the response to it, mistakes we made. I can remember wondering, am I coming home to the depressive who has made a suicide attempt today or to my little girl? And it was very, very, very disconcerting. So J.D. Vance, he also credits people like his mama, who was staunchly pro-Second Amendment.
And our movement, ladies and gentlemen, it's about grandparents all across this country who are living on Social Security and raising grandchildren they didn't expect to raise. And while we're on the topic of grandparents, let me tell you another mamaw story. Now, my mamaw died shortly before I left for Iraq in 2005. And when we went through her things, we found 19 loaded handguns. They were stashed all over her house, under her bed, in her closet, in the silverware drawer. And we wondered what was going on, and it occurred to us that towards the end of her life, Mamaw couldn't get around so well. And so this frail old woman made sure that no matter where she was within arm's length of whatever she needed to protect her family. That's who we fight for. That's American spirit.
Please use trigger locks. I know. I mean, have your defense web. I don't mean to be mean to Mama, but please don't leave them racked. At least that. You know what's funny is there was a test done with kids who grew up around guns and versus kids who didn't grow up around guns. And what they did in the test was they set a gun out in front of these kids. So some kids in the group had never been around guns. Some had. And I don't remember the exact percentage, but I think it was almost 100% of the kids who were raised around guns. They were playing and they found a real gun. They said, stop, don't touch that. That's loaded. That might be loaded. Get an adult. Whereas the kids who were not raised around guns picked the thing up. I think that comes from the culture of gun ownership. I know my dad was ultra clear on the rules of guns. So J.D. Vance, of course, has to do this. J.D. Vance calls out Joe Biden's record as a career politician.
When I was in the fourth grade, a career politician by the name of Joe Biden supported NAFTA, a bad trade deal that sent countless good jobs to Mexico. When I was a sophomore in high school, that same career politician named Joe Biden gave China a sweetheart trade deal that destroyed even more good American middle-class manufacturing jobs. When I was a senior in high school, that same Joe Biden supported the disastrous invasion of Iraq. And at each step of the way, in small towns like mine in Ohio or next door in Pennsylvania or Michigan, in states all across our country, jobs were sent overseas and our children were sent to war. Joe Biden has been a politician in Washington for longer than I've been alive, 39 years old. Kamala Harris is not much further behind. For half a century, he's been the champion of every major policy initiative to make America weaker and poorer. And in 4 short years, Donald Trump reversed decades of betrayals inflicted by Joe Biden and the rest of the corrupt Washington insiders.
The true story of the Trump presidency, term one, I think boils down to this. Wait, he wasn't joking? Wait, he's actually going to bring American manufacturing home? Do you know how much money we've been paid to move it out of the country? Wait, he's actually going to enforce immigration? Wait, these are just things we say to get elected. What is he doing? He's actually going to continue to critique our generals? You can't do that. We're the DC power base. And it came down to that, I think. J.D. Vance wants to put the citizens of America first.
And every single day for the next 4 years, when I walk into that White House to help President Trump, I will be doing it for you, for your family, for your future, and for this great country. Thank you. God bless all of you, and God bless our great country.
So J.D. Vance concluded his remarks saying he will work for the American people.
Together, we will put the citizens of America first, whatever the color of their skin. We will, in short, make America great again.
When J.D. Vance speaks that way and speaks to us that way and speaks from that heart, it's very attractive. So I want to go back to a question. Is working for America possible without working for God? I don't think it is. What is America? It's either a landmass or a people. Well, you can't work for God for the landmass. The landmass exists. It's one of the common blessings. But what about our governing documents? They're godly. I think they were God-inspired, but they're documents. They're inert. They're paper. They sit there. They do nothing. We are going to work for people. Okay, so we save America through the people, by working for the people. How? There are, in fact, the common blessings of food and water and shelter, but leaders are called to lead, to actually lead, not to boss, not to direct, not, as the Bible warns us, do not lord your power over others, but to lead. Where are we leading America with a platform that has removed biblical marriage? Where are we leading America with a speech at the Republican National Convention that didn't come out and say one love, but meant it? We can be welcoming of same-sex attracted people into the party, and we should be, though long as we understand. We cannot agree that marriage is between anything other than a man and a woman. We can agree that no one should be allowed to hit you because you're same-sex attracted. No one should be allowed to do these things to you because you're an American. We should agree. You should not be put up against the wall by a terrorist group like Hamas because you're same-sex attracted, which is why we don't want terrorists like Hamas in our country. It's why we confront that evil. We could agree on these things, simply not on the non-biblical stuff. We should be able to do that. I liked what J.D. Vance had to say. It was expected. His role is to not be as captivating as President Trump, and it's difficult to be as captivating as President Trump. President Trump, God gifted him with enormous charisma. That's a gift. It's also a trick, by the way. If you ever are bored, go research what David Bowie taught about charisma. And David Bowie was the furthest thing from a godly man, but he sure understood charisma as a trick. From Revolver.News, related to the convention, right before the Trump rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, a group of moderate Hill Democrats held a tense Zoom call with the White House to express their concern about Biden's ability to win and their ability to win should he tank and take them down with him. The call was even worse than the debate, one of the participants told me. He was rambling. He'd start an answer, then lose his train of thought, then he'd just say whatever. He couldn't complete an answer. I lost a ton of respect for him. A second participant in the call confirmed this characterization. The president was rambling, dismissive of concerns, unable or unprepared to present a campaign strategy, and a particularly troubling exchange with Jason Crow, saying to him, "Tell me something you've never done with your bronze star like my son," this member of Congress told me. Had the assassination attempt not occurred an hour later, I imagine 50 people on that Zoom were ready to come out publicly against him. Biden ended the call on Saturday just after 5 p.m. by saying his staff told him it was time for mass. The attempted assassination happened shortly after 6 p.m. A third participant confirmed the description to the president's demeanor during the call to my partner, Abby Livingston. This is written by Puck and it reproduced in Revolver.News. So with that, we had now the rumor that Biden is now willing suddenly to step down if he has a bad flu, if a doctor comes to him. And on CNN, Van Jones said something truthful and well-constructed.
A bullet couldn't stop Trump. A virus just stopped Biden. You've got the nominees of this party getting their butts kissed. Biden's getting his butt kicked by his own party. The Democrats are coming apart. The Republicans are coming together.
The Lord laughs at the wicked. The Lord laughs at him. It's right in the Bible, which is useful for teaching and rebuke and all forms of instruction. It's also the complete and inerrant word of God. Psalm chapter 37, verses 13 through 22. We'll not get through all of them. But the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he knows their day is coming. We'll just read 13. I'm guessing if the Lord is laughing at you in that manner, that's probably not good for you. Yes, he's laughing at the wicked. I believe the Lord allowed Joe Biden to be figurehead so we could use the phrase figurehead and not laugh at his dementia, because dementia is not funny, but laugh at a media forced suddenly to recognize this and Democrats forced suddenly to admit it. The thing we've seen all these 3.5 to 4 years, the man is nakedly not able to serve. And now that the assassination attempt failed, the lies of the Secret Service boss have become comically obvious. Yes, the figurehead Biden is suddenly open to dropping out of the race.
And talking to a senior Democratic advisor tonight who is telling me this, he said he believes the president is being, quote, more receptive to these calls of concern. He goes on to say this: the private conversations with the Hill are continuing, this advisor tells me. He's being receptive, not as defiant as he is publicly. Goes on to saying, talking about Vice President Kamala Harris, who initially he wondered how she may fare in a campaign should it come to that. I'm told now he's asking questions, saying, do you think Kamala can win?
Asking questions. My friend Eric Erickson said on Twitter that the best plan for the Democrats would be to go to visit Joe Biden in Delaware, to walk in and say, sir, congratulations on two great terms as president. Are you willing to speak at our convention to nominate your vice president who served you for two terms as president? Get it? Took me a second. Two terms? Maybe he wouldn't know. All of this happened in the shadow of an attempted assassination of the president of the, or the former president of the United States. I'm going to continue to dig into this the same way I dug into COVID, because it is far too much, far too many indications that someone said, let this one go by. Now, it could be incompetence to a T, that's it. But know this, that tyrants always want incompetence working for them, because competent people can map their way to the top. They can come and take your job. Secondly, incompetents are often happy just to have a job, particularly a high-paying job. So when we hear from someone who's not incompetent, who's not gone out to seek fame, who says something that is going to exact a cost, we should listen. Tom Knight, manager of Butler Township, confirms law enforcement all knew about the shooter on the rooftop.
Did in fact see an individual on the roof with a weapon.
He saw the shooter.
He did.
Your officers are on patrol. They hear that there is a suspicious person on the rooftop. What did your officers do?
So our officers in the area started to converge on the building. My understanding is they did a full perimeter walk of the building. Weren't able to see up on the roof. Two of the officers went to what appeared to be the lowest point from ground to roof. One of the officers actually boosted the second officer up high enough for him to grab hold of the roof. When he was able to pull his head up over the roof, he did in fact see an individual on the roof with a weapon.
He saw the shooter?
He did.
And what did the shooter do?
Turned towards him, had the barrel of his weapon pointed at the officer.
At that point, the officer's hanging on
yes.
to the side of the roof?
Yes.
Unable to pull a gun out?
Unable to... Really,
unable to defend himself? Unable to reach his radio?
Any of that, yeah, yeah. Strictly defensive movement for him to lower his head, duck, lost his own grip, right? Fell approximately 8 feet to the ground.
That's a steep drop.
It's a good drop, yes.
Did he get hurt?
He did.
In that moment, did they realize there's a threat right now to the former president?
They did. So both the boosting officer and the officer that fell were both on the radio, indicating that there was an individual on the roof that did, in fact, have a weapon.
Who did they radio?
So there was a blanket tactical channel being
Everyone
used.
Heard it.
Everyone heard it. Everyone heard it. Huh. Welcome back in the Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome back to the Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Someone just sent me a note saying, I agree with you. Hold on a second. Mark writes, Dallas, Texas. Todd, listening to you on AFR right now. Great points about the Republican platform. I believe President Trump should have biblical marriage put back into it. Shame that it was taken out. Do you remember the history of Hulk Hogan and his lawsuit against Gawker? Wasn't that a case of adultery, Hogan having sex with someone else's wife? You know what? I do recall that. I remember the suit against Gawker. Incidentally, that suit, I believe, if I'm not wrong, was funded by Peter Thiel, who is one of the same-sex attracted Silicon Valley guys who's pouring money into the Republican National Committee and efforts to elect Donald Trump. And they've made it very clear. I don't know Peter Thiel personally. I went to a Thiel meeting, weird meeting, really weird meeting. His people reached out to us and I think we were being auditioned. It was a weird, weird, weird meeting. Very good food, but weird meeting. It's people like Peter Thiel who've said, look, we'll help you guys get elected. We'll help you with money and data, but only if you get rid of your objections to same-sex attraction and same-sex marriage. Rachel Maddow has discovered the secret language of the so-called far right. It's called ORC.
Like Mr. Thiel, who has named his companies after things in the Lord of the Rings series of J.R.R. Tolkien books. Lord of the Rings is a sort of favorite cosmos for naming things and cultural references for a lot of far-right and alt-right figures, both in Europe and the United States. Peter Thiel names all these things after Tolkien figures and places, like his company Palantir, for example. Like his mentor, like Peter Thiel, who had given him all his jobs in the world, Mr. Vance also, when he founded his own venture capital firm with help from Peter Thiel, named it after a Lord of the Rings thing. He called it Narya, N-A-R-Y-A, which you can remember because it's Aryan, but you move the end to the front. Apparently that word has something to do with elves and rings from the Lord of the Rings series.
It was Gandalf's Ring of Power, by the way, which he wore in secret. Narya was described as having the power to inspire hope and to inspire others to resist tyranny, domination, and despair. And only in Rachel Maddow's head does that mean Aryan. The Lord of the Rings book, by the way, is also Catholic theology, almost to a T, right? And the story of the writer Tolkien and C.S. Lewis is one of the most incredible stories of one man bringing another to a faith that you'll ever hear. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with their feature called the Tower of Babel.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
Who doesn't love a yellow school bus?
Trans women are women, trans men are men, and non-binary people are non-binary.
If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites in the Tower of Babbling. Soundbite number one. Figurehead Biden cannot remember Lloyd Austin's name, so he calls his corrupt Secretary of Defense the black man.
And so it's all about treating people with dignity. And it's about making sure that, look, I mean, for example, look at the heat I'm getting because I named the Secretary of Defense the black man. I named Ketanji Brown. I mean, because of the people I've named.
The black man. The man's name that you can't recall, the black man. No, you are not getting any heat for putting Lloyd Austin in that position. You're getting heat for a lot of things, not that. Lloyd Austin's corrupt, but you're not getting any heat on that. And you should be able to remember your Secretary of Defense's name. That seems sort of important. And when you can't remember someone's name, I don't think any longer we do the thing where you say, you know, the black guy. But maybe that's just me. Second soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. Figurehead Biden does his creepy whisper thing, talking about how somehow restoring Roe versus Wade.
Said that you will restore it. How can you be assured that you'll be able to do that?
The Supreme Court did it. Trump appointed the Supreme Court with the express purpose of doing it. So that's the way it works.
They're still going to have the majority, no matter if you win or lose.
Well, there's going to probably be two more appointments to the court. There's probably two people going to resign.
Maybe some of the justices are going to resign. Maybe you think you know that? Precarious position in which we find ourselves, though, isn't it? Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling, Joy Reid did that thing she does where she speaks words that almost appear to make sense until one, you know, puts them in order and reflects about that for about 3 seconds.
But his survival of that and bouncing right back and going right to his convention is being conveyed in the media world as a sign of strength. This current president of the United States is 81 years old and has COVID. Should he be fine in a couple of days? Doesn't that convey exactly the same thing?
No. Actually, no. No. Everybody gets a flu. Or at least sick. I don't know if I've ever had the flu, but I'm sure I have. No, Joey, everybody gets sick. Not everybody misses a bullet to the head by half an inch. So to answer your question, no, it is not the same thing. It's not in the same universe of things. It's not even if you employ the theory of the multiverse. Is it in the same single section of multiverses? It's not the same at all. Got it? Good. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I don't have anything to share with all of you at this time. And I'll just leave it there.
On a Disciple's View.
A lot of emails this week, and I do like to get to these when I can. I'm sometimes derelict on this, and I feel bad. People write me long emails, and I get into a guilt loop. Because a long email should involve me writing you a long return. And I don't always get to do that. And I feel guilty. Therefore, I wait until I'm on the show. And then I sometimes let much, much more time go by than should. Then I want to do the emails. This is from Nancy in Charleston, South Carolina. Dear Todd, I listened to you on AFR. I have a question for you about the process of doing what you do. How much time do you spend reading and watching media and prepping for the program versus doing the show? The show is an hour in length. I'm going to guess that you spend at least an hour on each program prepping that. Do you ever find that tiring? Love what you do, and I love AFR. Become a monthly donor. Nancy from Charleston, South Carolina. How much time? Well, that's difficult to say. The reality is this, that if you are in radio, in talk radio like this, and Rush Limbaugh, my radio mentor, a guy I filled in for a couple hundred times, said this, that show prep never ends. sometimes in daily life, I see things and I think, oh, this is great, great show material. This is a story I need to tell. This is something I need to relate. This is something, a conversation that I should share with people. This is an experience. Like this weekend, I shared with you what I did this weekend with the boys. On specific show prep, though, actually sitting down and saying, okay, I need to construct a program. Yeah, it's about an hour per show constructing the program. That is laying out where I want this piece of audio and that piece of audio. And then that lives in a document to which Randy has access. Randy runs things behind the scenes. Deciding what goes into the program, that's probably a couple hours for each show. Now, I have a head start on that because I do a podcast. So sometimes there's crossover material. We treat it a little bit differently here because in podcasting, people choose to download the shows. They already know who I am. They're making that decision to listen. Radio is a tune-in mechanism, so people drive by. That's why Rush used the phrase drive-by media. He was joking about how they just drive by the scene of a car crash and, oh, here's what happened. But people are driving around picking up the signal, so we treat it a little bit differently. I appreciate the note, Nancy. Thank you very much. This is from Michelle in Dallas, Texas. Isn't this the second one from Dallas today? Second one from Dallas, Michelle? Dear Todd, I listened to you on AFR and have recently began subscribing to your podcast. You have a beautiful setting behind you. Could you describe North Idaho for those of us who've never been there and what we're seeing behind you? Also, you mentioned from time to time a team. Who is actually on the show with you behind the scenes making things happen? Appreciate the note. Michelle, thank you from Dallas, Texas. All right. Now, this doesn't apply to AFR, but if you wanted to see this, you go subscribe to my, you can go, I'll tell you what, we give you a 7-day free trial. 7-day free trial of our video service. It's video.thetoddhermanshow.com. You go there, you subscribe, you get to try it for 7 days. What you're seeing behind me is Coeur d'Alene Lake. And I guess describe North Idaho to people who have not been here. There's probably within a half an hour drive from here, three major lakes. Three major lakes. And if you want to extend that to about an hour and a half, probably four major lakes. One of them, the deepest on the West Coast, Padre Lake, is the deepest. And we have Priest Lake, and it's very green, very lakey. You see moose where I live. I see moose just about every week. I see deer every single day. So there's people here who consider deer pests because they're in the yard so often, and it's reflexively nice. People in North Idaho are nice people. We have a tradition here, true story. If you're driving down a one-lane road, you're supposed to wave at people. So if you're like in a neighborhood or a one-lane freeway, someone's approaching you, you're supposed to wave. And there's the North Idaho dude wave, which is two fingers off the steering wheel and a head nod. So there's that. This is from Kimberly in Bozeman, Montana. Todd, I learned about you on your podcast after listening to you on Rush for years, but I travel and have begun listening to you on AFR. My question for you is about the time your daughter spent in treatment. You've mentioned this on many occasions. It seems to have made an impact on you, but you've never mentioned what was the cause of that. You've said something very bad happened to her, but you've never explained that. So my question is twofold. Are you willing to explain what happened? And what were the symptoms if you're not willing to explain what exactly happened? Thank you for the note and for listening and for jumping over from the podcast to AFR. No, I cannot and will not tell you what happened. My daughter will have to make that decision. And she may one day decide to tell you that story. But I will tell you what happened by way of telling you what happens. I'll try to make sense of this. About the age of 13, our daughter, well, no, I guess 11 or 12 is when it manifested. Our daughter was putting on masks. It happened suddenly. My daughter had been a outgoing, confident, athletic, smart, at ease girl, at ease with who she was. She could go into a group, and if kids didn't accept her, she didn't care that much. I remember when she first started going to speed skating, and I saw her trying to make friends with some girls who at that time were very good speed skaters, and they didn't want anything to do with her, and they made it clear. And she skated over to me and I said, oh, I was seeing you were trying to talk to this girl. She goes, yeah. I go, is it hurtful that they didn't want to talk to you or be friends? And she said, no, I don't really care. I'm not going to let them stop my fun. I love that. She was someone who had a group of friends with whom she was comfortable. She was comfortable in her body. And one day she wasn't. Now, this happened over time. We didn't notice it because one day she wanted to wear a bunch of sweatshirts. Well, kids change their fashion. Then one day she wanted to cut her hair. And kids change their fashion. Here's where it became bizarre to me. My daughter has always had a deep, deep, maybe even obsessive love for animals. Always. Very early on, I think around 7 or 8, she said, you know what? I don't think I like eating meat. And she would eat it from time to time. In fact, one of her favorite foods was steak. I used to call it snake. She told me, you know, I actually thought it was snake. It was steak. But then she started to not want to eat meat. And it was her body. We told her that's not a great nutritional choice, but she stuck with it. You know what happened about the age of 12? She started to joke about roadkill. She started to laugh at animals being killed in movies. And before that, she wouldn't even stay in the room. She would cry. She was putting on masks. One of the masks she was putting on was the mask of a girl who really hurt her. She decided to wear the mask of an aggressor because she was tired of being the one who'd been aggressed against. Parents, when you see your kids begin to depart the ways God made them, sometimes it's being a teen, sometimes it's being an adolescent, sometimes something horrible happened and they're trying to erase the old self and move on to a new self. Mask wearing is never good. And sometimes adults wear masks. Sometimes adults don't want to see the changes. I don't know that I wore a mask, but I didn't really dig into why she was wearing them. Thank you for all the emails. You can email me at thetoddhermanshow.com. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because He first loved us, we speak His Word. We walk in the path of Jesus to make disciples of all nations. Until God says we can speak again together, may His peace, which transcends all understanding, rest upon you and your families. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman, and this has been A Disciple's View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.